You are listening to All Things Considered from NPR News.
And this is WJFF, your community radio station, Radio Catskill. And right now, for our end of the second hour of All Things Considered, our live interview, joining us on the phone now, we have Shannon Wong, chapter director for the New York Civil Liberties Union. Shannon, are you there?
I am. Okay, I'm thrilled to be following All Things Considered.
You're part of the show. You're here. You made it.
That's like a bucket list item.
Well, I'm no Terry Gross, but we'll do our best. You know, just so people know, New York Civil Liberties Union, you're focusing on the rights of New Yorkers, how you protect people who are most at risk, including low-income New Yorkers, people who are incarcerated, immigrants. My guess is those groups are disproportionately people of color. And what we're seeing right now and what we would expect to see is that people of color are being disproportionately negatively impacted by this current crisis. I'm wondering, even as we get into the details here, before we get into the details, is that what you're seeing on the ground? Is that, can you confirm that for us?
Yeah, I have been, actually. We're working on three cases for folks who are incarcerated in the Hudson Valley area, one of who is positive for COVID-19, and two who feel at great risk to exposure. And I think what you said about the Civil Liberties Union is correct. We really are very focused on protecting people who are most at risk. That includes low-income New Yorkers, people who are incarcerated, immigrants. We're also pretty focused on paying attention to education equity and making sure that people across the entire economic spectrum have access to quality remote learning.
And so,
and just to be clear, the NYCLU is the New York affiliate of the ACLU. So sometimes people get that a little confused, and I like to clear it up.
Right, and I didn't want to falsely link those two things if there isn't a connection, but is that really kind of how it works? Kind of like this is a state chapter of the ACLU?
That's right. If you lived in any other state, you'd be the ACLU of Texas or the ACLU of Kansas. But we wanted to keep that New York at the front of our name, so we are the New York Civil Liberties Union, also known as the ACLU of New York.
All right, New York. So on the issue of people who are in jails and prisons right now, they're facing the reality of what we're being told, what everybody's being told to keep themselves safe in this crisis is to socially distance, to self-isolate, to keep away from other people. People who are incarcerated don't have the ability to do that. And we've actually seen different responses to this depending in different areas. I've spoke with somebody from Pike County in Pennsylvania at the county prison and just the different ways they're trying to get people out of the prisons if they can. Because of the dangers of this time. Is that happening in New York, and how is it happening? How is it going?
So it's not going well enough, and what you say is correct. There is an inherent space and resource constraint in prisons and jails, and prisons and jails are essentially breeding grounds for communicable diseases. The people who are in confinement have little to no control over their own movements and are like living in very close quarters. And as a result, they're particularly vulnerable to COVID-19. We have sent letters to the governor. I've sent letters to the county sheriff and the county DAs in all of the Hudson Valley, asking for a reduction in the incarcerated population to stem the influx of new admissions to jails and prisons and to protect the well-being of people in jails. We'd also like folks to be transparent about the measures they are taking. So if they have a plan, if your county jail has a plan to mitigate and manage COVID-19, we'd like that to be public. It's the people who are family members or friends of folks who are incarcerated are deeply concerned about the health and safety for those who are inside. And so we have been working to pressure the governor. If people are interested in doing that, there is a click to action on our website, which is nyclu.org, to pressure the governor to use some of his executive powers. It's also possible that local defenders, like a legal aid society or a public defender, can apply for release of folks who are in jail. And if the district attorney, like in Erie County, there were just 17 people released who were coming up to their release dates. I think they were like 45 days of being released. So Erie County released 17 folks. That was an agreement made between the Legal Aid Society, the district attorney, and then approved by the judge. So there's lots of different avenues to try and fight for folks released. And we're particularly committed and interested in trying to get people who have underlying health conditions, and we've all heard them, right? Lung disease, heart disease, diabetes, cancer, people who are pregnant, you know, released. We also would like to see people who are over 50 years of age released, because in a correctional setting, 50 is actually considered elderly because there's lots of advanced signs of aging, and folks who are incarcerated when they're around 50 actually present medically much more like they're 60 or 70. And many studies show they pose the least risk to public safety. The other group of people that we are working very hard to ensure are released are people who are detained for administrative reasons. That's things like failure to appear or for parole violations. First of all, these are folks who are not dangerous. They've missed an appointment. They've failed to register. Those folks should absolutely be released. And we actually have some litigation right now for folks who are incarcerated for administrative reasons at Rikers. And if we win that case, everyone around the state will qualify, will be in that class. So people who are in jail and invulnerable, people who are in for administrative reasons, and then people who are in jail pre-trial, because as always, we're deeply committed to ensuring that people remember and acknowledge that when you are arrested, you are not convicted, right? That you are still innocent until proven guilty. And so the folks who are serving sentences, who are currently incarcerated without being sentenced to something, should also be released.
Now, that case in Rikers that you just mentioned, so you've got a case in court, but I mean, we're in the middle of this crisis. It's barreling down on us. How long is that court case going to go on for?
They can issue like a preliminary injunction, like something that happens almost immediately. We filed on a week ago today on April 3rd, so we're waiting to hear shortly, we expect, about what happened, happen with that case.
Okay, and I'd say one more question on this particular issue. As you say that you're pressuring the government, specifically the governor, about this, so that would say to me that A, the governor is not doing what you want him to do. But so if he's not, what is he doing? What has he said or his office said? Like what's the party line right now about what they are doing?
I think it's fair to say that on this issue related to COVID-19. They've been fairly silent. There was one question asked by the press corps, I feel like it was a week or 10 days ago, but I'm sure like everyone, time is such a weird factor when you're sort of in social quarantine and your days are the same. But he was asked, are you doing anything to help release folks? And in that press interview, in the press conference, he said no. Although it was our understanding that there is a sort of state directive to like look at people who are in on parole violations, but the criteria by which someone would have to qualify to be released is fairly limited, and it was a very small number of people, and we're still looking to verify that information.
I mean, I don't want to.
So he hasn't done much on this issue. He's done a lot, you know, on protecting lots of folks, but it's our job to protect the most vulnerable New Yorkers.
And so I guess that this is not new for you in that. I mean, everything about this crisis is new. But the fact that you're trying to get attention for people that a lot of other people and institutions tend to overlook, that's not new for you. That's what you're often doing, is saying, hey, pay attention to these people and their needs.
That's right. We are often water in the desert for folks.
So along those lines, you're talking about equity in education. Now, is that an ongoing issue, or is that something specifically related to this current crisis, or is it an ongoing issue that's taken on new urgency with this crisis?
So it's an ongoing issue. We actually have an education policy center, and I would say education inequity is pretty common throughout the state. But in this issue, the issue around how many... You know, we've heard stories of people who have one iPad in their family and it's now being shared by three students. People who don't have good Wi-Fi connections. People who have parents who have to be working from home and they have one laptop. So the sort of digital divide is one of the things we've heard most commonly. And what we're trying to do, because you know, it's just the nature of our work that we try to get the data before we take action so that we are always ensure that our actions are informed by good information, we have a survey that we're trying to get around the state, also on our website at the Education Policy Center, where we're just trying to get a sense of, like, what's your school doing? What are they doing for kids who don't have access to the internet? How are they helping kids who have special needs, right? So once we collect all of that information, I think we will be able to make some more informed advocacy and policy suggestions to they have access to quality education.
So you're trying to get details right now, but you think in terms of this crisis, the biggest inequities in terms of education would be access to hardware, software, and connectivity for students.
Yeah, and I would say we've got some concerns about kids who have special needs, like who needs, you know, additional support in their learning.
Right. And now how about another group that you work with and advocate for, immigrants? How is this current crisis affecting them, and what are you looking at in terms of the immigrant population?
Yeah, the thing that is most clear to me about immigrants is the fear that they have been living with as a result of the Trump administration's essential attack on immigrants is potentially catastrophic in this situation, because they're afraid to go to the doctor. They're afraid to go to hospitals. They're living in close quarters. Many of them are still working, because that's how lots of immigrants, particularly in the Hudson Valley, are working on the farm, and that's still happening. So there's real exposure, and they are in close quarters because, you know, space is something that you get with privilege. And folks who come to this country and are struggling are, you know, often more economically disadvantaged. So the risk for them is high. Additionally, they're afraid to go to service providers because they're afraid ICE is going to pick them up. And then all the issues that are for folks who are incarcerated for criminal issues are the same for folks who are incarcerated for civil immigration matters. So I know that there's, you know, a lot of our immigration work is done by national, because federal immigration law is a sort of a national issue. But we've been working on a release for vulnerable folks who are incarcerated, and trying to ensure that people get. One of the things we discovered was it should be the case that people get an individualized assessment about whether they are a flight risk. And we have discovered through a FOIL request and an analysis of the data that ICE, particularly in New York City, was not giving people individualized assessments to see if they were flight risk. They were just denying release to everyone. And so we have a court case related to that. And included in that case was the additional vulnerability of COVID-19 and asking them to not let this get dragged out of the court system and to address it more promptly so that we can try and help folks get released more quickly.
I guess I was surprised to hear, and again, this is another kind of rural area in northeastern Pennsylvania, Pike County, who we spoke to because they're part of our listening area, saying that they're working with ICE on releasing people from the county jail. And I'm ignorant of this issue, I guess. I was surprised to hear that ICE has people in the county jails, that they aren't putting people elsewhere or just kind of dealing with cases. Are these people just being warehoused, or is it the fact that they're in the country without proper clearance, so therefore that's a crime, now you're in jail?
So first of all, it's like a civil matter. I want to be clear that most immigration offenses, like being in this country with expired papers, is a civil matter. It's not a criminal matter. And ICE has said that they are going to, like, only prioritize folks who have also committed some kind of criminal offense. I wouldn't say we've seen that to be the case. I just saw my news feed a story of someone who was 18 and therefore released from a children's facility and picked up by ICE at that facility and sent to Orange County Jail, which is also, I believe, in your listening area, right? You cover Orange County?
They're just on the fringes of it, but yeah, we're familiar with Orange County, absolutely.
Yeah. And so Orange County Jail, here in the Hudson Valley, has a federal detention center. Like they have a contract with the federal government, so they're not a federal detention center. They have a contract with the federal government, and they hold ICE detainees, and they make, like, millions of dollars, like between $6 and $8 million a year on their federal contract to hold ICE detainees.
Wow. And so this is why you're the NYCLU is asking federal court for an emergency order to have ICE release people from jails in New York and New Jersey unless they pose a clear safety or flight risk. Shannon Wong, we're going to have to get going, but what's your website again for the NYCLU?
NYCLU.org.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us and talking to us today.
Happy to do it. Have a great day and stay safe and stay inside.
All right. Stay safe. Thank you.
You too. Be well.
Okay, that was Shannon Wong. Shannon Wong, chapter director for the New York Civil Liberties Union. As she said, in other states, you'd be called like the ACLU of New York, but they put New York right up front in their name there. This is WJFF Jeffersonville, W233AH Monticello, and support for that last hour.